Hello and welcome to the world-famous and award-winning Driving You Crazy podcast. This is the show where we talk about all things transportation, anything that gets you from here to there. I'm the traffic anchor and the transportation reporter for Denver 7 News, Jason Luber. If you would like to contact me, you sure can. I have all of my contact links in the description of this show. We also have the listener hotline. That phone number is 303-832-0217. Well, we keep hearing about, but are now finally seeing, the start of deliveries by drones. To me, it's interesting, but I'm frankly, I don't know, not too excited about it. I do, though, have a ton of questions about how it's going to work, and not just the logistics of flying a drone remotely from some place to another place, dropping off the cargo, and then flying it home like a carrier pigeon, but specifically about the legal implications, like, what if it crashes into my car while I'm driving down the street? Or I'm walking on the sidewalk and it drops the cargo on my head. Are they trespassing by flying over my house? And what about my peace and quiet being destroyed if I'm in my backyard and here comes this high-pitched buzzing of a drone motor? To address some of those legal issues and many more is attorney Zach Daugherty. He's with Colorado's 3i Law Firm. Zach focuses on transactional, corporate, and real estate law, but specializes in uncrewed aerial systems. It's a fancy legal way to say drones. Zach, thanks so much for being here on the world famous Driving You Crazy podcast.
Thanks, Jason. I'm happy to be joining you.
All right. So how did you get interested in this field of aerial aircraft law? Did you always want to be a pilot? Did you just like hanging around airplanes?
Yeah. You know, it was, the real answer has to start with, you know, I've just been a total aviation dork since I was a little kid, you know, and I grew up in Aurora, and the first time I saw the Blue Angels was at an air show here in Denver, you know, when I was 5 years old, and I think something just clicked for me. Eventually realized that I wasn't going to be a pilot. But, you know, even once I went through law school and started practicing and realized that aviation, I really wanted it to be a part of my career going forward. So it was probably, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, I started having conversations with attorneys, and I started working with attorney Patty Arthur, who's a former airline pilot that did a lot of drone work. And so, you know, I mean, 5 or 6 years ago, it seems like ancient history in the drone world, but that's kind of how it started.
And I'm sure the legal ease is easier to study and maybe more interesting to you because of your personal interest in this industry.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such a huge part of it, Jason, for me. And, you know, I love the fact, it's obviously frustrating for clients, it's frustrating for lawyers, that this is such an unknown area right now. And, you know, we are in the midst of trying to figure all this out. But that's part of what I love about it, is that, you know, we're sort of seeing this legal regime slowly start to coalesce that's going to enable this technology to really change our lives, I think.
I was doing some research, as I'm apt to do before my interviews, and I was looking at your Drone Law Digest webpage. I'm probably the only person that's not seen it recently because it could use a refresh. But you say that the aviation in that page, that aviation is entering a second golden age. Are drones, you think, the driving force to this second golden age?
Yeah, I think 100% drones are going to be driving that, you know, and part of just to circle back, Jason, to your question about how I got into this, I obviously just read a lot about aviation history from the manned aviation perspective. And so you can see a lot of similarities, a lot of parallels with what's going on right now, that we are, you know, in this brand new world with these aircraft. And the FAA does, by the way, consider drones to be aircraft. But we're still even just figuring out how they're going to change our lives, how these things are going to work. And, you know, I mean, I think you look at, say, aviation in the 1920s, you know, and you imagine these barnstormers going around the country, kind of drumming up interest, and society was really starting to take note. But the reality is, even the most forward thinkers at the turn of the century, 100 years ago, could not have imagined what aircraft would turn into and all the uses they'd be applied to and where that world would go. I think that's happening right now, that, you know, 20 years, 30 years from now, Jason, there are going to be huge applications of drones that we haven't even thought of yet.
Do you own a drone or do you fly one?
I'm in the process right now of getting my Part 107 certification through the FAA so that I can fly them legally. I'm involved with a lot of people who use drones as part of their businesses and recreation. you know, and I think even on the recreational side, just the photography aspect alone has changed a lot, that people realize they can get this amazing aerial photography with relatively cheap drones. And that's part of what interests me in it as well.
Yeah. Even inside buildings, we have a, you know, our photographers, some of them are pilots certified. And I've even seen with real estate, the guy across the street was selling a house and they use the drone inside the building. Video that way. So it's a really unique way to tell a story or to see a space.
And I think a lot of people, part of the reason I loved talking about this with the media is I think a lot of people don't realize that this is no longer science fiction of talking about, you know, what if drones are doing this stuff in the future. They're being used commercially all the time. There are companies that have business models that rely on the use of drones. It's happening now.
My guest is Zach Daugherty. He's the attorney at 3i Law here in Colorado. We were talking about the legal concerns around drones and drone deliveries. So one of the challenges, I think, for drone operators, I would think, would be defining what is technically your airspace and what isn't. When I was in the news chopper, we would and could fly anywhere. We could take video. We had a great camera. I could zoom into all kinds of things on the ground and get into people's private lives, if you will, from the air. But we were flying at 1,000 feet above the ground. Drones, I don't think, are allowed to fly that high. But I think they're still seen differently than a news chopper is. So a couple of questions here. How far up, let's say, in a cylinder is considered the airspace over my home or my property? And then how far out would there be a distance wise, like north, south, east, west would be my airspace?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? And I wish I had a super easy answer for you on that. But if I can just unpack it maybe one step at a time.
Sure.
If we talk about how many feet above your property is considered yours, It depends, right? Because obviously if we go 30,000 feet up when United Airlines flies over every day, that's considered public airspace, okay? That's in the public domain. For decades, really, a lot of the court decisions, you know, including the U.S. Supreme Court, have kind of looked at this idea that, well, if it's in the navigable airspace, meaning that the FAA has authority that they allow the public to fly around in, just like a news helicopter, that is not part of your private property, right? So I mentioned earlier that, you know, drones have kind of dumped all this on its head, because suddenly if we say, well, the FAA has deemed drones to be aircraft, drones are, if you're flying under Part 107, drones can fly up to 400 feet above ground level, with a few exceptions there. But that the problem is that is the maximum they can fly. And so, you know, technically an aircraft, meaning a drone, could fly 15 feet over the ground. And so the question becomes, well, wait, is that now navigable airspace? The way that courts have worked this out as far as private property, and you know, this is certainly a work in progress, but it's they look at what your immediate, they call it your immediate reaches above your house, okay? And so it's really where you can make use of it economically, where you can have a reasonable expectation of privacy above there. The Supreme Court has been clear that 500 feet or 1,000 feet up, like where a news helicopter or a police helicopter for that matter can fly, you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy from someone looking down on you. I would say it becomes a real gray area. We can talk in the extremes of, like, yes, if a drone's hovering 10 feet over your yard, that's almost certainly a trespass. If it's 1,000 feet up, it's almost certainly not a trespass. And we need to figure out where the line is drawn, you know, between those two.
Yeah, because if I can legally, if I'm standing on a sidewalk, I can legally take pictures or video from the sidewalk of someone in or around their home, because I am in a public space. Even though they're on private property, I am a public space. I can still take, because as being a member of the media, I know a lot of these rules. So I can stand on a sidewalk and take pictures of you and at your house as you're standing outside, or video. Now, if I was just, let's say a drone has a camera on it. So let's say I was holding that drone and it was running, the camera was running. Would that be okay to use that as a video camera? Is it different than if I let the drone fly right next to me in that public space? Or because it's then not attached to me or me holding it, does then it go under different rules? Do you see what I'm saying? So if I'm holding my camera, I can take pictures of you. And if I'm holding the drone, maybe I can take pictures of you. But if I let go and let it fly right next to me, right next to my head, can I still be taking that video and pictures of you?
Yeah, I think I understand exactly what you're asking. And the short answer there is it doesn't really matter if you're holding it, if you're not holding it. And, you know, frankly, if you're flying a drone on a public sidewalk, for example, you can take pictures of people that are out.
But
on
it's
the
not
sidewalk,
it's not on know. The sidewalk. It's over. It's hovering over the sidewalk.
Yeah.
You know,
well, exactly. I see your point there. They would still probably the courts would consider right. that. It, and, you know, a big distinction, too, is not just where the drone's flying, but where the person is that you are, you know, filming or taking pictures of. Because obviously inside your home, you have a very high expectation of privacy. Yeah, right. In the immediate reach, like, you know, they call it your curtilage, like your backyard right next to you, like your patio, still very high. But then we start moving out to, like, let's say that someone's on a 2-acre property, right? They're on their private property, but can a drone take pictures of them there? That starts getting a little more questionable, you know, as far as the, and I guess one other caveat that I'll throw out here just to make it a little more confusing okay. for everyone is that we're kind of talking about all this as if it's one sort of law that we're figuring out. There are separate state law issues with trespass, which is the drone physically crossing over your property, but also invasion of privacy, which doesn't necessarily require any physical invasion at all, right? And then we get into, like, nuisance, which is yet another civil claim where the noise from your neighbor's drone could technically lead to a, you know, cause of action too.
Yeah. And I want to get into some of that in a little bit as I'm speaking with sure. Zach Dougherty, attorney at 3i Law here in Colorado. We're talking about the legal concerns around drone deliveries, but also drones and taking video or pictures while you are in or around your home. And as you were mentioning, there are different privacy rules for recording video depending on where you are in your home or around your home or on your property. But what about that privacy rules for if I was in the news chopper at 1,000 feet above, my camera could easily see everything that you're doing on the ground very clearly because of the yeah. way those cameras, I mean, they're just really great cameras. So what is my expectation of privacy if there's a news chopper flying around compared to a drone that's just flying over the street, but taking that exact same video?
Yeah. And there have been a series of cases, Supreme Court decisions that have talked about, you know, how this reasonable expectation of privacy depends somewhat on the technology that's being used. And so, you know, we can look at examples from past cases of police that are using surveillance equipment that includes, like, thermal, you know, optics, yeah. things like that, thermal imaging. And the court there basically says, if this is not technology that is readily available to the public, you know, if this is specialized, then you have a reasonable expectation that someone's not going to be using, you know, that kind of technology. Now, when it comes to zoom lenses specifically, it really, I think the states are not entirely consistent on this. And, you know, the reason I bring this up, I actually did a presentation last Saturday on just this issue with privacy rights. And I came across a Alaska Supreme Court decision from this year, a few months ago, that involved a police helicopter that got a tip about someone growing marijuana on their property, was flying overhead, used a camera with a 9x zoom, so a pretty powerful zoom lens on it. And the Alaska Supreme Court in this decision said, no, actually, they've gone too far. And of course, they didn't have a warrant. That's the key thing here, right? But expectation of privacy. So in that decision, they're basically saying, okay, we're going to cut it off when it's a zoom lens that has 9x, you know, optic power. That's the technology going too far. I don't think that's totally consistent with what other states have done. And again, other state, you know, every state can kind of decide this on their own. It depends on the technology that's available in the market. And, you know, Jason, as drones become more common, I think it's going to start to change the public expectation of privacy too. You know, that people are going to start assuming more and more that drones are flying around. Now, and I certainly am not saying this to suggest that, you know, therefore drones should be allowed to film you at any time. I mean, these are legitimate concerns. But my whole point with Alaska is just that in that one decision, they said a zoom lens on a helicopter can actually go too far.
But I think that's a difference between your Fourth Amendment rights versus, with the police versus just some private creep who might be trying to find somebody flying around and just looking at your backyard.
Yeah, it's a good point that it's somewhat different standards as far as what the state would have to prove, but at the end of the day, and the overlap here is that it all comes down to reasonable expectation of privacy for individuals. Right. So talking again about drones, flying over your house, things like that. And I think we see some states that are trying to make specific drone surveillance laws of saying that it's illegal to make photos or videos of people using, an uncrewed vehicle, yada, yada. There are a lot of people in the industry, and I tend to agree with this, are of the position that, listen, we don't have to rewrite privacy laws. Drones are a new technology that are fitting into privacy laws. But then again, so were cell phones that had cameras on them, 10, 15 years ago. There were a lot of concerns about that, people using these tiny cameras on cell phones. It's still a legitimate concern, but it's not to say that the laws have to be reinvented to address it.
Well, and there's Google Satellite, too. I use Google Satellite all the time and Google Street View when I am researching a news story, a traffic story of some sort. I'm always comparing, and then I can go back and compare year after year how a intersection might have changed for at least my research purposes. But it almost seems now with the cell phones and with cameras everywhere and with Google Satellite and Street View, there's almost nowhere I can go that's private anymore.
Yep. And that was part of the Alaska Supreme Court decision. They really leaned into this idea of a slippery slope that, listen, we've got to look at where this is all going. That decision had to do with a helicopter, but they were very aware of the fact that it's going to be drones, eventually that are flying everywhere. And again, your expectation of privacy is different when you are out on a public sidewalk, when you're in the market, versus in your home, in your backyard. But it doesn't mean that it's non-existent. I mean, even out in public, you have privacy rights that someone can't be, following you, for example, taking videos of you and posting them all, things like that. You still have rights. They're just lessened.
My guest is Zach Daugherty. He is attorney at 3i Law in Colorado. We're talking about legal concerns around drones and drone deliveries. When it comes to drone delivery, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But before they get to the delivery area, there is a nuisance factor here. They are loud. I'm sure this technology will, I'm sure, evolve to make the motors a little bit quieter so they're not as annoying. But when you hear one, you know it. You know that it's around. You might not be able to pinpoint it, but you know it's there. And we would get calls to our newsroom from people in a neighborhood. Let's say we were flying over a house fire or a crash or something, and we'd be over there for 15 or 20 minutes because that's what we do at TV. We circle and circle. And the neighborhood, they would call the newsroom and say, hey, could you go away? It's 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'm still trying to rest, or it's just really annoying to have a helicopter that's really loud flying over my house. So is that the same for the drone? What is the nuisance level or issues there with drones and drone deliveries?
Yeah, I mean it's a very similar concept, right? And I live near City Park, and I think about that with the Flight for Life helicopter, that is landing and taking off, all the time at that hospital. So again, we can look at prior decisions. I mean, going back 100 years, because even in Denver, when they started laying the streetcar lines, homeowners would complain about that, right? And say, listen, right. I had this perfect, neighborhood, and all of a sudden there's a streetcar running down the middle and bringing all this traffic and this noise, and then a more recent example, and this is tied to aviation, is when DIA was built, and there were two big lawsuits from landowners that were underneath the flight path for landing, aircraft, and said, these were lawsuits against the city of Denver that said, you have fundamentally changed the nature of this property. They called it a taking, like basically you've stripped the value of this. From a nuisance perspective, in order to prevail on a claim that would be based on, you know, the noise of drones, for example, it has to be noise. It has to be a disruption that is unique to your situation and is not something that the courts would say all of the general public has to deal with, even if it's a different degree. And so using the helicopter example, you know, the Colorado courts look at that and say, listen, everyone has to deal with helicopter noise. And, you know, when they're flying over news stories, when they're landing at the hospital, everyone hears it. We know that. Even though some homeowners have to deal with it a lot more than others, it doesn't make it a actionable, you know, claim for nuisance, because it's the same kind of issue that other people have to face. It's just a greater degree of it. So with drones, I think there's going to be a real parallel of that, of, you know, once we get there's all kinds of regulatory issues that are still, you know, undecided right now, Jason, but once we start seeing drones used more often in like a delivery context, for example, there almost certainly will be these lawsuits, you know, against Amazon, against Google, against the city, against the FAA, anyone, right, that's saying you're allowing all this to happen and I can't sleep and everything. The reasonable standard is going to have to come back in. And generally speaking, just the fact that people will hear drones is not going to be enough under our current legal regime.
And hopefully the technology eventually will make them a lot quieter and less, you know, nuisance ridden. So, future technology could solve current problems, if you will, you know, in this instance.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, and I mean, to take a higher level view of this issue, that the drone industry, the commercial drone industry, realizes as a whole that they will never, become what Mandy Aviation became, you know, after the 20s and 30s. They will never rise to that level of prominence unless and until the general public accepts this technology, wants this technology, right? So that public acceptance part is a huge critical piece here.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that in a little bit. But when I was thinking about these drone deliveries, there must already be, and I'm sure there's more on the horizon, a web of regulations to navigate from the FAA to on the federal level, and I'm sure there's state, local, city regulations where the drone is flying either commercially or privately. Because I know our photojournalists, as I said, have been certified. Several of them have been certified and licensed to fly our station drones. Do you have to be, let's say I go buy one at Walmart, do I have to be certified and trained to fly it? Or can I just go over to the Walmart right now and go buy one and start flying around my neighborhood?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked this, because I think this is a big misconception, because it is so easy to just go pick one up off the shelf. But the FAA does have federal regulations that apply to any drone that is greater than 0.55 pounds. So, I mean, that's tiny. So anything bigger than that, even if you're flying it recreationally, making, you know, no commercial purposes whatsoever, you still need to register your drone with the FAA. You need to take a trust. It's an exam that you can take online through the FAA to get your trust certificate, that basically, you have to show that you understand basic rules, guidelines for how you're going to fly
that. Is there paperwork or anything I have to sign when I buy the drone that says I will do those things?
Not at all.
Yeah.
And I think that right there, it certainly gives a lot of consumers this false sense of security, because, you know, and I mean, I totally understand this. You think they wouldn't let me buy this, right? If it weren't legal to just pick it up and fly, right? To be fair, I mean, a lot of the, like, for example, the recreational, you know, exam that people have to take now, that's fairly new. I mean, I think that was just implemented year and a half ago. And then there's also remote ID requirements that are going to apply to all these drones. And that's basically, you know, it's referred to as a digital license plate, but based on your registration of that drone, it's going to be a transponder on the drone that emits certain information that law enforcement can pick up that will identify who the operator is, who that drone is registered to, you know, just in case it does crash or it's causing a problem, it's going to be easier to track them down.
Well, who says I can't register my drone under your name? And I said, I put all your information out there, or anybody's, because I can find them readily on the internet.
Yeah. I mean, It's a great question. I mean, I believe with the registration system with the drones, they have to be tied to a specific serial number on the drone. But no, there's going to be all kinds of issues with that. You know, I mean, again, though, using the license plate example, you and I both know driving around Denver, and I'm sure your viewers do too. It seems like the registration requirements are not being followed by everyone, and perhaps a majority of people. And so there are going to be issues with that, but it's a step in the right direction of the FAA saying, okay, listen, you know, we've got to have some way to identify these drones if and when there's a problem.
Well, and that's a matter of what you're mentioning is there are a lot in Denver specifically of people either have expired temporary tags that are really old, or they're not registering their vehicles anymore. And a lot of that comes from they can't afford the insurance for their vehicle because they're so expensive, or they have previous issues with vehicle collisions or issues, you know, fines and that sort of thing, tickets. So they can't afford their insurance, first of all. And then secondly, at least here in this state, it's not like it's $100 to register your car. If you have a pretty nice car, it could be $1,000 to register your car. So those people don't have the money, and therefore it's cheaper for them to drive with no insurance and no registration that's active, because if they get a ticket, it's a tenth of what they would be paying for coverage for insurance and all that other stuff.
That's an excellent point, you know, and it's a great example of how, you know, regulations need to sort of steer behavior in the way we want it to go. And that people in a lot of ways, as you just explained, are disincentivized from registering their cars. So, you know, I mean, that's probably another topic for another day.
I know it's funny. I did a story a while back where it was because somebody had their car towed. It was cheaper for them just to get the car out of the tow lot, have them just because they tow it. And so you can't drive it off because you don't have current registration, but they can have it towed somewhere. They have it towed to a street right near where the towing lot is, and they'll have it dropped off there. And then the people get in and go. So there's always a ways around it. Always.
Yeah. I guess the takeaway there, I mean, we're going to run into all kinds of things like that. That's on the state level. When we talk about federal regulation for such tiny consumer products, goods, enforcement is a huge question, right? Yeah. You know, and I mean, the FAA is realizing that they don't have their own FAA police force driving around looking for people driving, you know, if they're flying unlicensed drones. They're relying heavily on local law enforcement to kind of partner with them. I mean, you know, the FAA can't delegate its enforcement authority to local police, but there's a big outreach program, you know, where the FAA wants, like, the Denver Police Department, for example, to know, like, here's what you do if you do get a call of someone flying their drone over your house or crashing in your car, you know. And it's a lot of just reporting and kind of investigating what happened, so that then the local police can share that with the FAA, who can then decide how to proceed. And I realize, you know, we went off on a little bit of a tangent here, just to answer the rest of your question, that, you know, on the federal, so there are those federal regulations. There are some state regulations as well, and that depends a lot on the state. And there's a big concern because there are also local regulations, and we see that even in certain cities. The problem is that we start developing this patchwork quilt of regulations to where, again, for this industry to really scale up, if Greenwood Village in Denver and Inglewood and Aurora all have different rules for how and when these drones can fly, it really cripples the industry.
Yeah, and as I was speaking to Zach Daugherty, he's an attorney at 3i Law in Colorado. We're talking about the legal concerns around drones and drone deliveries. Like you said, it's one thing to be, let's say, in Denver and fly drone deliveries in that one town. But then if you're going to between different cities with different regulations, that's a problem. But let's say I live in Philadelphia, and I want to deliver something to Wilmington, Delaware, which isn't that far away. And then I have something else I'm going to deliver to Baltimore, which, again, isn't that far away when you're looking at crossing over state lines between Pennsylvania and Delaware and into Maryland. There have to be some kind of regulations or rules that or make that flight probably more complicated. Or would it be just like if I was in a delivery truck, I can just go from state to state to state and make all my deliveries with no problem?
Yes, the FAA is absolutely of the opinion that is their domain. Okay, they're going to make the regulatory scheme for delivering packages, especially across state lines. But frankly, even, you know, within Denver, if you are anyone who wants to deliver packages with drones is going to have to follow specific rules in the FAA, and it's called Part 135. And so that was a whole system of regulations that was developed for manned aviation. So you think of the big, you know, UPS DC-10s that are flying out of, you know, DIA. They're trying to take that Part 135 and apply it to parcel deliveries done by drones now. And it's frankly, I think five companies have received like a full Part 135, five drone companies have received a full Part 135 certification. And it's all the kind of the giants you would expect. You know, it's Amazon, it's Google Wing. I think it's UPS is one of them. And the reason is that it takes several years in most cases to get these certifications, you know, to get a Part 135 authorization from the FAA. So it's really, especially going back to the package delivery context, it's not the kind of thing that like a mom and pop shop is going to start doing.
Yeah. Let's say if I'm having issues with the FAA going from flying it from one state to another, what if I could take my package that was in Philadelphia, I drive it over to Baltimore and then I could fly it there. Right. I mean, I think there are ways to probably get around some of these FAA regulations, especially going state to state.
There are. And yeah, I mean, but the FAA is really taking a broad, and you know, I'm not criticizing this. The FAA is basically saying that we are preempting the entire field of air safety and airspace efficiency. And so, you know, that if you go back to the roots of the FAA, and that was their job was to be in charge of making sure that the national airspace system was safe and that it was efficient. So over the next few decades, they've been interpreting of like, okay, well, where exactly is the line we draw of, you know, the FAA regulation for things that are solely within Colorado, for example, that don't cross the state line. And the bottom line is that they have really expansive authority, right? So they, you know, even if it doesn't cross state lines, the FAA, as soon as we start getting into the navigable airspace, which again, with drones now, that's kind of, you know, a question of, does that include a drone 10 feet up? The FAA is going to exercise total and complete authority over anything as far as like you, if you run into any like state or local laws that go so far as to say you are allowed or you aren't allowed to fly a drone, period, that's almost certainly going to get overturned by the FAA.
Yeah. And I'm surprised there aren't more drone drug deliveries across the southern border right now. Because, you know, you would think that obviously there's issues with the border itself, but just considering flying a drone low altitude with some kind of a package where if it's strong enough to do that, you would think that the folks that do that sort of thing would want to.
And yeah, I know it is happening. I agree with you. It's shocking that, well, and frankly, you know, I don't know exactly. I haven't seen any statistics or numbers on at the southern border, how much of that they're seeing. Part of the difficulty that we run into there also on the enforcement side is that there are a limited number of federal agencies and bodies that have authority to shoot down drones. And so, you know, it like local police, for example, can't do it. I'm fairly confident right now Border Patrol is not authorized to shoot down drones because, again, they're considered aircraft. So so I think there's a big problem there. And tied into what you just said, Jason, yes, sneaking drugs across the border, but drones flying into prisons, for example, right?
Yeah,
you know, delivering things into yards. And it is happening. It's happened before. They realize this is the thing. You know, and it's kind of a cat and mouse game on the technology side of how quickly the countermeasures can be developed. And they're probably a lot further along than a lot of us on the public side realize, you know, that the capabilities for the Department of Defense, for example, to take down drones. I mean, we've seen that in the Middle East recently.
Yeah. And I know drones are especially deliveries are more popular in other parts of the world, you know, especially in Europe, especially in Africa, where there's more distance for deliveries to go to. It's obviously a lot easier to fly a drone 40 miles than try to roll a truck on some pretty rough dirt roads in some of those rural parts of Africa and other parts of the world. Why there's more than here? Is it more about our our government acceptance and regulations, or public acceptance and regulations, more so where it's more free there to fly than here?
Yeah, I mean, the places where you are really seeing this start to take off right now. So there are a few African countries that have really benefited, you know, from, and there's a company based in San Francisco, Zipline, that really innovated this for medical delivery specifically in Africa. And they started, I believe, 5 or 6 years ago out there and are really starting to deliver this at scale. So they chose those countries, my understanding, for a few different reasons, but a lot of those reasons, Jason, are what you touched on, that the regulations are less restrictive. They probably were more able to work with the government, the local government, and probably the national government to get these authorizations to, you know, figure out here's how it's going to work. But at the same time, just the nature of that airspace is so much less congested, right? And that's kind of the FAA's big challenge here, is that they're controlling the busiest but also the safest airspace in the history of mankind, right? Granted, the history of mankind, you know, airspace wasn't a big deal until, right. But nonetheless,
yeah.
So you know, the FAA is looking at this and saying, you know, yes, we can see that a lot of this technology is starting to prove its value, but they are taking what's often derided their phrase, crawl, walk, run. You know, their approach with integrating all of this.
Yeah.
So it's taking a while, but there are also some challenges here that we don't face in other countries.
What do you think makes most sense to start delivering by drone? Probably not a pizza or my coffee pods from Amazon, right? Maybe parts to fix the car that goes to a shop, or I would think obviously medical supplies or blood supplies or something like that, you know?
Yeah. And even so, yeah, I mean, on the first aid side, and that's kind of a lot of the use cases that we have seen in Africa specifically, where blood supplies, even delivering, for example, a defibrillator to someone who's had a heart attack, right? That you can zip it out to them in a half hour or so. So there are some on the humanitarian interests of, you know, medical deliveries make a lot of sense. There's an open question, I think, with the medical side of how is this going to make economic sense, right? Because who's going to be paying for all this? I mean, obviously saving lives, it's tough to put a dollar amount on that. But at the end of the day, we all know that, you know, health systems in America are very budget conscious, budget driven. And these drone programs, you know, for the medical side, they're not necessarily cheap or easy to set up. So I think there's still a question mark there of where the real profit model is going to be for the medical stuff. But to answer your question, and there are companies like Walgreens, for example, Walmart's doing a lot of this at, you know, test cases around the country, delivering prescription drugs, right? So not necessarily a medical emergency, but you think about in this aging population, how many people it's difficult for them to get out of the house. And it seems crazy that so many people would have, you know, difficulty just getting their medication because they can't make it to the pharmacy. And so the alternatives are you have a medical courier that jumps in, you know, a private vehicle with one prescription versus being able to throw this thing on a drone and have it delivered immediately. So,
and if I get in a crash on the highway, let's say in a rural part of the highway, if I'm laying there injured, I'm not the one to say, hey, don't send the medical chopper because that's going to cost me $30,000 to save my life, right? But wouldn't it be the same for the drone, where if I could get a shot of whatever, adrenaline, because I'm having a panic attack of some sort, and that drone delivery could get to me in 2 minutes, and then it saves my life. You know, where's the cost basis for saving your life in those? Because right now, insurance will pay, or partially, you can get insurance to pay for medical flights.
Yep. No, and you're absolutely right, because there, you know, it's obviously impossible to put some kind of a dollar value, and nobody in a medical emergency is going to, you know, look at the app that could order the drone and try to look at the menu of how much it's going to cost, right? Yeah. And be like, well, oh, wait a minute, let me call my insurance company and see if this is
covered. Let me get my good RX prescription card and see if I can get a discount.
Yeah, it certainly is not going to be a case by case. You know, it's going to be a bigger part with the hospital systems themselves making the decision to implement this program, right? To say, okay, you know, this is worth it for us, for our bigger mission, our bigger goals, that we think having a drone delivery system can make at least an economic sense to where it can fit into our budget somehow. But, you know, then the benefits we get from a quality of care standpoint can justify it.
All right, let's say I have Zach's Cookie Company, and mm-hmm. I go buy a drone and I register it in my name, and I'm making cookies out of my kitchen here, and you live across town. Could I then attach the bag of cookies or Zach Cookies could attach the bag of cookies and fly it to, you know, across town and deliver it that way? Or if I'm just a personal guy, if I'm just Zach and not having a business and I want to send my cookies to the neighbor a couple of doors down, could I do it that way? I mean, are there different rules for that type of a drone delivery?
Yeah, there are. And you know, I hate to tell you for the future of, you know, Zach's Cookies, if that's the business model that not. But I mean, I love the name, by the way. But
thanks.
Yeah. As far as delivering, you know, anything, even a bag of cookies, right? So step one is that you'd have to be operating under a Part 107 license, right? If you're delivering parcels, technically you can do that under Part 107. But let's say you go through all the effort of getting Part 107. Here's the problem with operating it commercially, you know, and this is the test that I told you that I'm preparing to take myself. It's a couple hundred bucks. You go into the FAA test center for an hour or two. So it's not a big deal. It's not difficult. But that still prevents you from flying your drone beyond visual line of sight. Okay. That's it. And so you think about that from a delivery perspective. The only way you could make that work then is if you were following the drone with the command center, the remote control, and that suddenly strips all the economic benefit out of these deliveries, right? Yeah. I mean, and that's where, you know, Part 135 that I talked about earlier, that some of the giant delivery companies are now receiving, that's where the benefit is that if they can get an authorization to fly their drones autonomously beyond visual line of sight, I mean, that's where the money can be made, is that you sort of set it and forget it, right? Put that yeah. stuff in the drone, off it goes. It's automated, comes back. If a human is sitting in a control center and being able to watch it on a screen, the economics of it just don't make sense at that point.
Yeah. All right. Well, there goes Zach's Cookie Company. Thanks.
Unfortunately. Yeah. I'm also a terrible cook, so I caution you against anything tying me to culinary goods.
My guest is Zach Daugherty. He's attorney at 3i Law here in Colorado, not a baker. And we're talking about the legal concerns around drones and drone deliveries. There was a recent report how pedestrians are being hurt and killed in higher numbers by delivery vehicles, and it makes sense because there are so many more deliveries now. It's really easy, and I would venture to say most people that you know will have an Amazon account and be able to get deliveries in a day or two to their house. Now, the vans that are making these deliveries, they're pretty large. They have those flat fronts to them, and those type of vehicles cause more bodily injury when a person is walking or is on a bike and is hit by one of those vehicles. And there is a higher level of distraction by delivery drivers in general, because they're looking at where to go for their next delivery, or they might be distracted by any number of things, just like everybody is that are on the road right now. But it seems that more deliveries by drone could make the roads safer, because you're taking more on the road deliveries away. Therefore, it's safer for the people that are walking or biking.
Jason, I think that is one of the biggest promises of drones, you know, in the near future, is that, you know, I live in central Denver. Just actually driving home last night, you know, one of the streets was reduced to a one-way street because a Amazon truck was, you know, parked in the middle, parked on the side. Yeah. You know, and I was just thinking about that, because the traffic rules of, you know, who gets the right of way when your lane is blocked, so you have to go, you have to enter into the, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, there are, and I've seen some of the similar statistics of what's going on in the Denver metro area, and I believe those really are nationwide too.
Yes.
That, you know, auto accidents, pedestrian accidents, bike accidents, it's becoming a much bigger problem, and drone delivery specifically absolutely could help mitigate that, you know, because the biggest reason, what we've just been talking about already, is that it would get some of those Amazon, you know, I don't mean to pin this all on Amazon, obviously. It's the, you know, the next day delivery model is a lot of companies, obviously, but it gets those trucks off the road, you know, and so it's going to really, the idea is that, you know, once these drone delivery companies are operating at scale, it's going to relieve congestion on the roads. And, you know, it's kind of a secondary benefit of all that. You think about, there are probably a lot of people that are not biking to work, for example, because the roads are crazy right now. You know, they're dangerous. And I don't blame anyone who's scared to get on their bike in central Denver. But if we reduce the traffic by having a lot of these deliveries being done by drones, it may then start encouraging more pedestrians, more bikers to be, you know, commuting in other ways.
Yeah, it just makes, to me, it makes sense, but it's a matter of getting people on board to understand there are unintended benefits to just having a, it might be annoying to hear that sound for a few moments while it's making a delivery, but there could be some greater benefits to everybody involved with people getting more stuff delivered by the air.
And, you know, we touched on this briefly at the beginning of our conversation, Jason, that the public acceptance, you know, it's a balancing act, right? Yeah. And right now, I think a lot of people are so resistant. Well, there are legitimate concerns, you know, from a privacy perspective, from nuisance, noise, things like that. But the problem is that those concerns are not being balanced against some benefit that the drones are providing to most people. Okay. And, you know, that's where the streetcars 100 years ago would say, well, yeah, they do make a lot of noise. And they keep us up. But then again, you know, this is a way that we can get around that we never had before. And we do eventually come to tolerate a lot of these things that are kind of a nuisance that interrupt our lives, if we can see the benefit, you know? And so, the medical deliveries, I mean, you think about that, if drones in the Denver metro area could start saving lives, then suddenly the conversation is closer to those flight for life helicopters, right? That are much louder, but everyone's mostly okay with them.
But what if a drone takes my life because it just dropped this big delivery box on my head as I'm walking down the street, or it drops it on my car and then it causes me to get into a wreck?
Definitely. I mean, there's a zero, you know, a non-zero chance that could happen.
Yeah, right.
And I think, again, I would just, you know, caution anyone who's concerned about those, who has those fears, to just look at the existing risks, right? Of, you know, the vans driving around all the time right now. And, you know, I mean, I see a similar analogy with autonomous cars on the roads that, you know, there are a lot of concerns that, listen, you know, I don't want something autonomous, or I don't want a robot driving me around.
Yeah.
But humans are notoriously bad drivers.
Yeah, we are.
So it's, you know, again, we've got to weigh the pros and the cons to kind of look at, yes, theoretically, there could be a package that's dropped on your head. The good news is most of these packages are going to be very lightweight for the foreseeable future. And the other good news is, I would say, we are getting a lot of use cases, experiences, not just in Africa and around the world, but at metro areas in the United States. And as far as I know, and don't quote me on this, but not a single package has been dropped on someone's head yet.
Okay, well, that's good. That you're putting me at ease then. you very recently were a panelist at an Exponential, spelled with an X, exponential.org conference, talking about all of these different types of issues. What did you take away from listening to some of the other panelists that you were with? And what was the overall theme that you took away from your time there?
Yeah, so that was, it was in San Diego, and this was actually the third year that I've been speaking at this conference, you know, and it was actually in Denver a year ago, and then Orlando the year before. So it's always an interesting mix when I get done with the drone law portion of this, which is usually a full day event, because the takeaways on some level, you know, I walk away thinking, wow, there's so much that still has to be done and figure it out, you know? And that's one of the problems, you know, talking to a bunch of lawyers, that we can come across as pessimists sometimes and just point out all the things that could go wrong, right? But this, even compared to the last 2 years, you know, I had this real sense that it's becoming a reality, that we're getting enough experience with some of this technology to know that it can be used safely, and starting to find out some of the ways that that it really, you know, it sounds so cliche, but it's going to start changing people's lives. And I think the one other takeaway that I just want to throw out there, that we talk so much at this conference, and me speaking with a lot of vendors from around the world that are involved in this industry. And I think a lot of people tend to look at the evolution of drones and the integration of all this technology as kind of a black or white thing, right? Of like, well, are the vans going to deliver the drones, or are vans going to deliver packages, or are drones going to do it? You know, are the cameras all going to be drones, or are drones going to be illegal? And the reality is I think the successful model we're going to see is some kind of a hybrid where the drones start playing nice with our existing technology, our existing systems, and we start figuring out ways that we can use them with what we're already doing before we get to the point where they completely take over everything. And, you know, I think that's a really good way to look at all this, that there are intermediate steps, between where we are now and drones running our lives.
My guest is Zach Daugherty. He is attorney at 3i Law in Colorado. We're talking about the legal concerns around drones and drone deliveries. We all remember that Jeff Bezos, he promised drone deliveries about 10 years ago, right? And so, not to put you on the spot or that spot, but what is the time frame, do you think, for seeing this acceleration into drones and drone deliveries? I'm sure, like you said, we're probably going to start off slowly and then build over time with more acceptance.
Yep. And yes, I do get this question a lot. I think that in a lot of ways, it might be sooner than people think. And, you know, let's focus just on, say, the Denver metro area, or talk about, you know, Colorado, that there are a lot of programs. And we look at, on the medical delivery side, Salt Lake City is working with one of these companies to implement this. Dallas, Texas, you know, a lot of metropolitan areas on the East Coast. At that conference, I spoke a lot with a rep from Ohio, and he was telling me some of the things that state is doing. I think that there is a ton of promise in the near future, in the next couple of years, to start actually seeing drones, helping out people in different ways in this state and even in the city. One of the things that's missing right now is I would love to see more cooperation from the state government, from the city of Denver, from the local governments, to sort of build this, a coalition of all the parties that are involved, including the citizens who are concerned about all this, because they absolutely they don't just have a say in this. Them accepting this technology is a critical part. It's not going to go forward unless people want it. You know, I would love to see more being done on the state side to really take advantage of Colorado's aerospace economy, which, by the way, we have the second biggest aerospace economy in the United States, behind California. So it seems like such a natural fit that drones would be the natural evolution, in this state. And I'd love to see it happen more.
Well, I'm telling you, Zach, this has been a fascinating conversation. I know you're a lawyer, so please don't bill me your hourly rate. I wouldn't be able to afford it, because I know we've been speaking for about an hour, but I thought it was just so fascinating and interesting and a really lively and great discussion.
No, I really appreciate it too. I told you I'm an aviation dork through and through. So this is sadly, this is what I enjoy doing with my time too. So it was my pleasure, Jason.
And if you want to get a hold of Zach, you can get all the contact information from the description of this show. And I think this is going to be an interesting technology that will emerge, as Zach and I were talking about, over the next very short many number of years, as it will really start to crank up here. And to already see some states like Utah already using this technology, that means it will be spreading quickly, like AI. It's all of a sudden, hey, there's this AI thing, and now it's everywhere and pervasive. So it could be the same thing with these drone deliveries. And what will probably happen is you're going to see these drone deliveries starting, and then as some issues arise, then there will be regulations to look at those issues that come up, and other issues that unintended consequences that have to be fixed and all that stuff. So I just thought it was a fascinating conversation. It's one of my longer interviews, so I usually try not to keep them that long, but I thought this was just a really fascinating fascinating topic and so much to cover. So I thank Zach once again. Hey, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you sure can get a hold of me on all the contact links in the description of this show. And I thank you again for listening. And until next time, I'm Jason Luber, the traffic guy. Be safe, and as always, happy motoring.